Hotel Drogerije je...
Jože iz Šmartnega prodaja traktor znamke Univerzal, letnik 1998, zelene barve, številka modela.
Učinkovitost je pomembnejša od velikosti obdelovalne površine. Kalčer indoor, hidroponični in prezračevalni sistemi, žarnice, zemlja, gnojila ter ostali pripomočki za indoor gojenje rastlin pod vašimi pogoji.
Ljubljana, cesta v Šmartno 41A in 3xdw.kalčerindoor.si.
Holy Jesus, what is that
Nishmini.
I will tell you, Director Deutsch, as a former Los Angeles police narcotics detective, that the agency has dealt drugs throughout this country for a long time.
Oh, don't give me the conspiracy bullshit. Come on. You're a more intelligent man than that. Come on.
Drogerija, podaja o vojni proti drogam, reguliranih zdravilih, ljudeh in družbah, ki uživajo te ali one psihoaktivne snovi. Drogerija, vsako drugo nedeljo opoldne na Radiu Študent.
Drage poslušalke, cenjeni poslušalci, lepo pozdravljeni v drogeriji. 23. decembra smo, sonce je še zmeri na svojem mrtvom mestu. Jutri se po jutrišnjem ponovno začne dvigovati. Preživeli smo tisto, kar so napovedovali nekateri, da naj bi se zgodilo ob napačnem branju koledarjev starih ljudstv. V današnjem dnevu pa bomo predvajali intervju, opravljen pred 5 leti, ki bo opomnil na to, kako so čas dojemali v nekih malo bolj oddaljenih časih in kam vse te slike so spadale, droge, gobice, recimo, predvsem gobice, v tej krščanski, judokrščanski tradiciji. Jan Ervin, s katerim je bil ta intervju opravljen, je največ vlekel tudi iz del John Marka Allegra. Gianmarco Allegro je bil tisti jezikoslovec, ki je edini tolmačil, prevajal besedila najdena ob mrtvem morju, kumranske zapiske, ki ni pripadal duhovščini in skozi jezikoslovno analizo prišel do sklepa in spoznanja, da večino izrazov se nanaša na to ali drugo aktivno substanco. No, ne večina, ampak mnogi med njimi. Naj bo dovolj, pred nami je ponovitev.
What we have in our solar system is called the precession of the equinoxes, and the precession of the equinoxes is actually a great year, we have our standard solar year, which is 365.25 days that everybody's familiar with, that lasts from January 1st and through December 31st, and then we celebrate New Year's and it continues on. Above that, we actually have another year that's called the Great Year, the Precession of the Equinoxes. It actually lasts 25,800 years, and it's based on the wobble of the Earth rotating backward, as the word precession implies. It rotates backward through the through the signs of the zodiac, and it actually a lot of the ancient religious symbolism is based on this precession. And what we show in our book and in our video, our book is called Astrotheology and Shamanism, and our video is called the Pharmacratic Inquisition or Drug Ruling Inquisition. And what we show in that book is sort of an as above, so below philosophy, and we show different layers or different associations, larger and smaller, macro and micro, like the tornado versus the water going down the drain or something like that. And we do our best to show this ancient correlation in religious philosophy that we think is one of the most overlooked things, and it has a lot to do with yin and yang, as above, so below, light and dark, you know, all of these different aspects. And what we found when we were researching this information is that the precession, the worship of the winter solstice, the summer solstice, the equinoxes, is actually what made up the core of our ancient religious traditions. And with the winter solstice, what we have is let me start with the summer solstice. The summer solstice is typically on June 21st or June 22nd. And from the summer solstice, the sun from our earthly perspective appears to fall to the south slightly every day. If we look at the shadows on the walls of our home, if we wake up in the morning, we notice that the light changes. It's getting it gets dark earlier during the winter time than in the summer. The days are shorter. And what the ancients believed is that if the sun continued on this path, that the sun would actually die. And so the winter solstice celebration was actually a celebration of the death and rebirth of the sun in the sky. Mm-hmm. And excuse me, get a sip of water here. And so with the December 21st celebration, what happens is when we reach December 21st, the sun doesn't just immediately stop falling to the south. What happens is the sun hovers or stays in the same degree on the horizon for 3 days, from the winter solstice, which is typically December 21st or 22nd, until the early morning hours of December 25th, when the sun is actually born again and begins heading north. And for those of you in the, since we're talking that part of the world, I know that the Orthodox Church is very strong there, and the difference between the Orthodox celebration of Christmas on January 6th has to do with the 12 days of the Epiphany. And so when the Orthodox Church split from the Catholic Church, they designated the Epiphany as 12 days after the solstice. So that's where the separation of the 12 days comes in. So in actuality, the winter solstice is the celebration of God's sun, literally the sun in the sky, or the Sunse. And it has nothing to do with a historical figure or man. The reason why all of these ancient, or so many of these ancient deities, like Mithra was born on December 25th, Krishna has been suggested to Adonis, many ancient Attis, many ancient gods had their birthdays on the winter solstice celebration, and some of them had their birthdays, like the Persian god Mithra celebrated his birthday on the death of the sun, which is December 21st, which is St. Thomas's day now. But most of them celebrate it in the tradition of the birth of the sun on the 25th. But either way we look at it, it's still a solar tradition. Now, further from just the actual birth of the sun on December 25th, we have a lot of symbolism in the night sky, and actually the zodiac and the constellations are what were considered the gods and the deities and the angels in the heavens. And we have all of the Greek gods in the heavens. We have Asclepius and Zeus and Orion and Aquila, the bird, you know, the animals and all of these different things. And these were all the ancient gods that were, quote-unquote, heavens. You know, the heavens were where the stars were located, heaven. And so, you know, when you went to go live with the gods, you went to live with the stars, with the constellations. And in the morning of December 25th or Christmas Eve on December 24th, what we have is an alignment of the belt of Orion and the star Sirius. What happens is the belt of Orion is typically pointed at different angles during different times of the year, but on Christmas Eve it actually swings, or in the week before Christmas it actually starts swinging down, and then on Christmas Eve it points directly down on the eastern horizon where the sun will rise on Christmas morning. So what we have is a great big finger that points down in the sky where God's son will be born on Christmas morning. The star Sirius is the star of Bethlehem, and then the belt of Orion are the three stars of the Magi. And this is where the ancient tradition comes from, and as this as the sun stars up the horizon, what actually happens in between that time is just before the sun rises on Christmas morning or is born again, the sun falls between the constellation of Virgo, the celestial virgin. The sun falls between Virgo's legs and is considered to be born again on Christmas morning. So this is where we have the entire event. The animals in the stable, those are the different constellations, and there's actually a constellation called the stable. And so you have all the animals in the heavens, you have all of the characters there, right there in the heavens, and this is something that we can go outside every single year and watch. So this isn't something that, you know, we're supposed to wait 2,000 years for the return of Jesus, the God-man. This is something that literally happens every single year on December 25th, and we can all walk outside and be a part of it. And what happened was, at some point, the church actually separated December 25th with New Year's to make it appear that the two were not associated. But in fact, Christmas Day is actually the New Year's celebration. That's the real New Year's Day, the birth of the new sun.
Mm. All right, we've got the universe quite well covered now. But one more question. I'm not certain about this, but is it at this same period of time that the Big Dipper goes around the polar star, and that's the only time of the year that it does so?
Yeah, the Big Dipper was the chariot of Odin. Odin's chariot pulled by the goats, and it can also be said to be the sleigh pulled by Santa Claus's reindeer around the North Pole. And, you know, the Santa Claus and the reindeer come from the Siberian and Norse traditions of the winter solstice.
Mm. So, all right, if we move now to the symbology of the Christmas, okay, now we have, we've got the influences from the Christianity, from Coca-Cola, from a lot of things. But what was this entire symbology? We know there's a lot of Amanita muscarius involved in fairy tales, which are told at this period of time on postcards. We've got this Christmas tree. Maybe we can start off with the Christmas tree, what it means.
Well, the Christmas tree, what it actually means is it's a symbol of the world tree, or the axis mundi, which is basically the pole axis, or the north and south pole. It's a symbol of the world itself, and the tree, the evergreen, is a symbol of life that sustains itself through the darkest, coldest parts of winter. When most other things die, the evergreen stays green. That's why it's called an evergreen. That's the pine and the cedar trees, the fir trees, etc., the birch. These are all evergreen trees, and these trees were considered sacred and holy in ancient times, one, because they stayed green, and two, because of their tall, straight nature and the ancients' belief in fertility worship, they were considered a phallic fertility symbol. And the tree is, as far as how we celebrate it in Christmas, what the ancient traditions of the Siberian and Norse shaman would be to go out into the woods in the autumn before the Christmas celebration and collect the mushrooms, and then they would hang the mushrooms on the trees in order to dry them out for the winter celebrations. You know, the mushrooms are very large and heavy. Amanita muscaria can grow up to 12 or 16 inches in diameter, almost a half a meter in diameter. They're very large, heavy mushrooms. And so they would find a tree in the sun and hang the mushrooms on the tree. And then, I believe, in the 4th century, we have it in our book, the exact date, but the church tried to ban the celebration of the tree in the Eucharist, but eventually they changed their mind and they accepted it. But what they did was they replaced the pagan Eucharist with the church's wafers, so it was still the same symbolism. What was hung on the tree was the symbolism of the Eucharist, the Eucharistic wafer of Christianity. So that, like I said, the symbolism is the same. But the reason why mushrooms are considered sacred and holy with the trees is because these types of mushrooms only grow in a symbiotic relationship with those types of trees, with the pine, the cedar, the fir, the birch, the oak trees. They only grow in a symbiotic relationship with the roots of those trees. So the mushrooms are literally the fruit of the tree. And this is the brightly colored packages that appear magically overnight underneath the Christmas tree. Now, you mentioned Coca-Cola and that sort of thing. The guy that came up with the Coca-Cola story was a German author and would have brought those traditions with him from Germany. But there's a very good book on that subject by Dr. Patrick Harding at the University of Sheffield, and his book is called Christmas Unwrapped. And he goes into a lot of the detail on the origins of the mushrooms and their symbolism with the holidays and the change of the calendars and things like that. So if anybody wants a lot more detail, I highly recommend your listeners get that book.
All right, thanks. All right, so we could say that the Amanita muscaria was the forbidden fruit.
I certainly argue that, and I'm not the first to do so. Throughout Europe, we've found numerous depictions of Adam and Eve standing on either side of different types of mushrooms. There was one found in the Abbey of Montecito in Italy that's displayed at the British Library. There is another found at the Plaincarl Church in France. We've got the Canterbury Psalter in England and the Ethiopian Coptic texts that show mushrooms. The Bwiti tribe in Africa actually holds another psychedelic plant called Iboga, yeah. Sacred as their holy and sacred tree. So there's a lot of reference to sacred plants and mushrooms and ties to sacred plants that makes a strong suggestion that indeed the pine tree along with the mushroom is the fruit of the tree.
Yeah, I remember one, I don't remember, but I read once an Indian chief saying to a white man coming to him and prohibiting him the eating of peyote, saying that you've got your Bible, you can read, we can't read, and we've got our peyote and Jesus talks to us.
Yeah, well, they don't say, yeah, something like, you go to your church and talk about God, we go to our teepee and talk to God.
Exactly.
I don't think they spoke of Jesus specifically, but, being that it's the white man's conquering religion. You know, so, you know, that's the summary of that area of the, you know, the Christmas tree, you have the symbolism of the Yggdrasil tree, which is the north, which is the poles expanding into the heavens, which ties it into astrotheology and, you know, the worship of the heavens. So this is the whole symbolism, the as above, so below symbolism that I was trying to explain earlier.
Interested in one more thing. I've read once, and I would like your opinion whether it holds or not, that we could the Orion, the star system Orion, could be traced back to meaning urine, and since Amanita muscaria, when you eat it, you can also drink the urine, and you are, according to some people, even more strongly affected by the active chemistry.
Yes.
Do you think that holds? And since
the word Orion comes from the Greek, I believe, to make water. And we suggest in our book, as well as others, that indeed there is a tie between Orion and the urine drinking custom. There's one book out there that argues against it, but I don't think the research is very strong in order to support their case. But I would have to agree that, yes, it does appear that that the word Orion means urine, and as far as the urine drinking custom and it being stronger, what happens is the ibotenic acid is excreted in the urine in unaltered form. It's a cyclamide, well, I forget how to pronounce the word exactly, hydroxamic acid or whatever. It means that it's not destroyed in the body when it passes through. And so it can be reconsumed, and the ibotenic acid converts into mucimol in the body and is what gets us high. And some of the mucimol comes out in the urine as well. But the urine can be recycled up to 5 or 7 times, and it is suggested by many to actually facilitate a much stronger experience by those who are daring enough to try it. As far as the urine drinking itself, a lot of people will consider that, you know, very filthy and disgusting, but that's a very cultural bias. Many cultures, actually, like in India and China, they believe that urine is very healthy. You know, and if your readers are interested in more research in that area, I recommend they go on Google and do a search for urine therapy, and they'll get thousands of results back. You know, in fact, a lot of medical products today are made with urine.
All right. Okay, Jan, you've also, I mean, could we move on a little bit? I know you've written about the works by Allegro. You've also checked what he was discovering. Now, Allegro, as it seems to me, was in this not really good position.
You're cutting out on me a little bit. Can you repeat that?
Yeah. If we could talk somewhat about Allegro's claims about the whole Christian faith, the Christian religion, that Jesus actually did not exist as we believe he did, nor did the apostles, that they were more so the just the secret code names for different plants, maybe Amanita muscaria. Now there was a lot. I mean, the Catholic Church did not disagreed with Allegro, and there was also people working in the drug field, such as Jonathan Ott, Wasson, that disregarded his findings. But I know that you revitalized his work. You've checked it over again. Could you please talk a little bit of what holds with Allegro's findings and what?
Well, that's a very good question. I've actually just completed a new article called "The Schism: Wasson versus Allegro." Were psychoactive substances involved in the foundation of Christianity? And looking at the attacks from Wasson and Ott on Allegro, et cetera, and his research, and basically what I found was that Lawson made up all of his attacks, and when we went back through and actually verified every single reference and footnotes in Allegro's book to the original source, all of the sources checked out, and all of the errors that were in fact related back to Wasson, Schultes, Puherich, and some of Wasson's other friends. So it's kind of interesting that Wasson attacked Allegro. Now, the biggest attack on Allegro by Wasson was the argument by Erwin Panofsky, and Michael Hoffman and I collaborated on an article last year that totally debunked the Panofsky interpretation. Basically, what Erwin Panofsky was arguing as an art historian was that even though mushrooms look exactly like mushrooms, they're really stylized Italian pine trees. But what Erwin Panofsky still failed to recognize was that the pine trees are exactly what the Amanita grows underneath in symbiotic relationship with the roots. And the entire argument was based on the assumption that mycologists don't read art books. But the art historians failed to recognize in their argument that art historians do not read mycology books. So the argument was really a very silly, baseless assertion by Wasson and Panofsky. And what happened was in 1953, Wasson sent Professor Ramsbottom at the London Botanical Museum a letter stating that the interpretation of the plain coralt of France, rightly or wrongly, was going to be disregarded as a mushroom. Well, when Allegro was writing The Sacred Mushroom and the Cross, he came across Wasson's letter in Ramsbottom's second edition of the book in an addendum on page 48. And basically what Allegro did to discredit Wasson was to quote his own words, rightly or wrongly, we're going to discredit the Amanita as, or the plain coralt as Amanita. So Wasson's entire argument was based on an assertion by an art historian who didn't study mycology and didn't know the facts of the history surrounding the matter. And Wasson himself had actually refused to study entheogens in Christianity, which we show in the new article. He had actually come out and attacked Allegro because Allegro was willing to go into Christianity and study it. What Wasson argued was that the use of mushrooms was limited to the book of Genesis and 1000 BCE, long before Christian origins. So his position was very safe. He didn't want to threaten Christianity. And what we later found out was that Wasson was actually an account manager when he was vice president of J.P. Morgan, the banking company. He was account manager to the Vatican and worked directly with the Pope. We can't say that he had that this had a direct influence on his research and his findings, but you know, it's highly suggestive that Wasson, working with the Pope, intentionally limited his research. And when Allegro refused to be restrained by Wasson's 1000 BCE limitation, and Allegro, being a Dead Sea Scrolls expert, just decided to go around Wasson and study the mushrooms into Christianity and dismissed Wasson based on his own shaky letter to Ramsbottom. Unfortunately, none of that ever got out to the public, and Wasson lied about it and covered it up until his death, and made up lies that we show in this new article that others like Ott repeated. And unfortunately, Allegro. The blame for errors that Wasson had made and these other researchers had made that weren't his fault. And so, you know, that's I'm glad you asked that, because it gave me a chance to go into this latest research. But there was one other point that you had asked me to go into. Can you remind me what that was?
Well, the thing is, Allegro makes some significant theories about the whole Christian religion. What he says, I mean, if I'm not mistaken, is that
Oh, right.
Never existed, that the apostles, their names are code names for Amanita Muscaria, most likely, or different...
Right. Well, probably the most difficult part of Allegro's theory is the code names part. Now, was there a mushroom cult in Christianity? I absolutely believe he was correct on that. Professor Carl Rutt from Boston University has shown that beyond a doubt, Allegro was correct on that. Where we differ from Allegro, and Allegro was more of a pioneer. He was really one of the first to really seriously look at it. And so some of the things that we agree on are that we agree that Jesus is an anthropomorphism of the mushroom. We do agree with that. However, we also believe that the mushroom or that the sun is an anthropomorphism, that there are many other correlations taken from other religions that are also made a part of the Jesus story and not just the mushroom itself. So I think that Allegro was right in that the apostles were not real characters. We argue in our book that the 12 apostles were the 12 signs of the zodiac, and that Jesus is the sun in the sky on the macrocosm with a symbolic microcosmic relationship with the mushroom on the microcosm. So we approach that area a little bit differently, but we basically further Allegro's findings in that area.
Allegro's findings were mostly linguistic.
Yes, his findings were mostly linguistic, and in fact, just before Gordon Wasson died, I should mention that you had said that, you know, these other researchers were against Allegro. Carl Ruck has actually come out in complete favor of Allegro recently and published an article called Fungus Redivivus, where he's come out in total support of Allegro's work. And he argues, and I say falsely, that Wasson changed his mind about Allegro. But he says that he had a private conversation with Wasson, that Wasson, before his death, changed his mind about Allegro's work and said it was correct. But I have found nothing to corroborate that. And so, anyway, the attacks on Allegro by these different researchers have waned over the years. You had the team of Dead Sea Scrolls experts who published the letter in the London Times against Allegro, but what we found when we looked at that was Allegro's book had almost 200 pages of footnotes, and the people who wrote the letter to the Times only had, from the day that Allegro's book was published until the day they wrote the letter, they only had 1 week to read, verify 200 pages worth of very academic and scholarly footnotes, and write the letter, which we don't think was possible. We don't think that anybody has ever given Allegro's citations a critical review. Everybody has just dismissed them out of hand. And unfortunately, Jonathan Ott fell into that trap because he and Wasson were close friends. So when Wasson attacked Allegro, Ott went with it. And what we found is that a lot of Wasson's statements were purely out of his own self-interest to protect his own 1000 BCE theory. If Allegro was correct, then that made Wasson automatically wrong, and it also put his book Soma into question if Allegro is right. So, you know, we clarify that, I clarify that in this new article that I've just completed.
Okay, one more question. This is a really interesting conversation, but could you also tell me, Allegro was one of the few people that translated the Dead Sea Scrolls. And most, I don't know what the situation is now. Have all the Dead Sea Scrolls been translated yet or not?
Well, they have not all yet been translated. The majority of them have. Part of the problem was funding. The original Skrulls team, except for Allegro, sat on the Skrulls for 29 years, and none of the Skrulls came out until 1997, when the Huntington Library here in California released the photographs of the Skrulls against all of the original team's wishes. So, you know, it's a good question if all of them have been translated or not. I don't believe all of them have. I believe there's probably still a lot of the Skrulls that are in fragments. Probably a lot of others are still missing, you know, that that people, you know, that when the Skrulls were discovered, they were sold on the black market. I think even the New York Times ran ads for collectors to buy them. So a lot of the Skrulls went missing and things like that, so I don't know if we'll ever get them all translated, but I think probably the majority is or has been translated.
Okay, now just one more question before we end. The Christmas Day is coming soon. How do you think people celebrated this day, in a few words, thousands of years ago, and probably some small groups of people have done so throughout the history until this day, and in what way do you think this celebration should change in the future?
Well, I think I would love to see the celebration go back to a more traditional form of the Yuletide or Saturnalian celebrations, where, you know, the Yuletide, you got the Yule log, and the Yule log you burnt for 12 days, which brings up the 12 days of Christmas associated with the Epiphany and the Jewish 12 days of Hanukkah and things like that. But with the what I would like to see in the future would be a return to the 12 days of the Yuletide celebration and the Yule log. What that means is the death and rebirth, or the fire burning for the Yule log is in semblance of the death and rebirth of the sun. You burn the log for 12 days before Christmas, and then on Christmas Day you start a new fire symbolizing the new year. So it would be great to get away from the capitalistic sales pitch holiday season and go back to a more traditional recognition of what these things were, and, you know, an appreciation for a life. And that's the real meaning of what Christmas is it's a celebration of the return of the sun and the return of the new year and of warmth and of fertility and the planting of the crops and everything that we associate with life. And you know, the winter is ending, and, you know, it's technically in the middle of winter, but it's, you know, that's what the symbolism is about. It's about the birth of the new sun that's going to carry us for the next year. And I would like to see a return to the knowledge of the ancient traditions.
All right, Jan, thank you very much.
Thank you for...
Drage poslušalke, cenjeni poslušalci, poslušali ste Jana Irvina, intervju z Janom Irvinom, opravljen pred 5 leti. Jan Irvin proučuje preteklost, predvsem pa tudi tiste akademike, ki so se ukvarjali z drogami in pa kulturami, ki so jih uživale, kakšni so pač ti, v katerih je govoril Jonathan Ott, Gordon Wasson, John Marco Allegro, ki je bil sicer lingvist in se ukvarjal z prevodi kumranskih zapiskov in skozi njih naletel na droge, natančne gobe. Torej, približuje se svet večer, božič, dobro jejte, dobro pite. Včasih so jedli drugačno hrano v teh dnevih. Ta predni so našli gobe, tisti, ko niso bili pridni, jih niso. In ta pridni so jih ob tem času tudi jedli. Naj bo polno veselja, srečno, z vami so pa Želc in Matej.
Pokrovitelj drogerije
je?
Gospod Marko iz Lucije prodaja kombajn. Malo rabljen, redno servisiran, rdeče barve. Cena po dogovoru. Številka mobilnega...
Učinkovitost je pomembnejša od velikosti obdelovalne površine. Kalčer Indoor. Hidroponični in prezračevalni sistemi, žarnice, zemlja, gnojila ter ostali pripomočki za indoor gojenje rastlin pod vašimi pogoji.
Ljubljana, cesta v Šmartno 41A in trikrat dvojni ve pika Kalčer Indoor.
I
will tell you, Director Deutsch, as a former Los Angeles police narcotics detective, that the agency has dealt drugs throughout this country for a long time.
Oh, don't give me the conspiracy bullshit. Come on. You're a more intelligent man than that. Well, come on.
Drogerija, oddaja vojni proti drogam, reguliranih zdravilih, ljudeh in družbah, ki uživajo te ali one psihoaktivne snovi. Drogerija, vsako drugo nedeljo opoldne na Radiu Študent.